Many years ago, Riley Knight completed a degree in history. This proved to be a bad move, as it was absolutely useless for him. Until now, here's some half-assed history.
What's going on, mate? Great to have you along for some more half-assed history. This week on the agenda, we're going to be having a chat about the Siege of Tyre. I should point out there have been many sieges of Tyre. I'll have to be a little bit more specific here. This is probably the most famous one, the one done by Alexander the Great. It was when Alexander set his sights on capturing this island. Well, it was an island at the stage, not an island these days, but it was an island back then in modern-day Lebanon there. It was a very heavily fortified island too, back in those days. Great big huge city walls built right onto the shoreline there. And capturing it, as you'll find out, no small bloody order, I can tell you. Now, Alexander the Great, however, he's not called the Great for nothing, and bloody hell, you better believe that he didn't muck around when it came to trying to capture Tyre here. Now, the Siege of Tyre, it saw months and months and months of siege warfare, hundreds of ships, cunning subterfuge, diplomats being chucked into the sea, you know, all the normal sort of stuff. But most famously, it involved a causeway, a bridge type thing, being built out from the mainland towards the island as part of the siege effort there like that. If you jump over to Lebanon these days and actually have a squiz at Tyre, you'll notice it isn't an island anymore. And this is because of what happened with Alexander the Great. This is because of the siege we're going to talk about today. It's an incredible story that quite literally changed the face of the planet. So let's get to it, find out what it was all about. I've wanted to chat about Alexander for a very, very long time, but there's just so much to cover this bloke's life that it's sort of difficult to know where to start. I'm sure everyone has heard of him. I'm sure everyone's heard of Alexander the Great, but here's a quick refresher in case you've forgotten, or maybe you didn't know in the first place. He was born in 356 BCE. That's almost, 2,400 years ago almost, to King Philip II of Macedon. He was tutored by none other than Aristotle, the famous philosopher, as a young fella. And then he took the throne at the age of 20 when his old man died. And over the next 10 years, he waged war after war after war, expanding his empire all the way from Greece to India. He conquered the eastern end of the Mediterranean. He blasted through the Middle East into Persia and Bactria and Mesopotamia and got as far as Punjab in modern-day northern India. So this empire, it spanned a huge, huge amount of territory, because this was in addition to Greece, Anatolia, and Egypt. He assembled one of the biggest empires that the world has ever seen. And he did all of this, if you'll believe it, right, by the age of 30. Talk about a bloody overachiever. Thanks, Alex, old mate. Once again, making us all look very bad here. I've just turned 30 this year, and what have I ever done? I've, made a tin pot history podcast, and I beat Halo on Legendary. That's just about it for me. So, yeah, thanks very much, Alex, making us all look very bad here. Anyway, the Siege of Tyre. It took place relatively early on in his decade of conquest there. We're going all the way back here, all the way back to 332 BCE. Alexander had become king in 336 BCE. So he's been up and about for about 4 years so far, fighting through Anatolia, that's modern-day Turkey, and into the Levant, which is the eastern edge of the Mediterranean. You know, it's where like Syria, Lebanon, Israel, all of that, all those sort of places. So that's the Levant, right? So at the time, back then, this area is all part of the Achaemenid Empire, or also known as the First Persian Empire. And it's at this stage, of course, led by its very last king, Darius III. The Achaemenid Empire it stopped existing. It blinked out of existence, of course, once Alexander had his way with it. So again, Alexander, having a great time, ravaging his way through the northern part of the Levant there. He's winning battle after battle. He's taking names. He's having a great time, just doing what he does best. Now, he's outnumbered by Darius and the Persians, but this doesn't stop him. This doesn't stop him at all. He never lost a battle throughout his entire career. And, I don't want to spoil the ending for you, I guess, for what happened. But, again, he's called Alexander the Great. You can kind of guess there. And despite being outnumbered by Darius and the Persians, doesn't stop him. He's sending Darius running with his tail between his legs, especially after the Battle of Issus. After Issus, interestingly, Darius offered Alexander a peace settlement, right? He came to him with a treaty, said, look, let's just wrap it up here. I'm quite able to quit while I'm ahead here. Darius offered to surrender all of the lands that Alexander had already captured, as well as a 10,000 talent ransom for his captured family. Alexander had captured the family of Darius, and Darius was willing to part with 10,000 talents. A talent, by the way, if you didn't know this, is 26 kilograms of pure silver. In today's terms, right, Darius offered Alexander almost $142 million, United States dollars, in today's terms. That's how much Darius was trying to use to buy off Alexander from continuing to fight this war of expansion and conquest. But our mate Alexander, he doesn't care about the money. He's not in it for the money. He's in it for the glory. In it for the glory, mate, isn't he? And so he tells Darius to stick his silver where the sun shineth not. He continues to march his way south through modern-day Syria and Lebanon until he reaches Tyre with 40,000 soldiers or so. 40,000 soldiers he's got in tow. So a big, big army, enormous big army, and he's ready to get it done once he spots Tyre there on the horizon. Now, Tyre, as I mentioned, city built on an island, about a kilometre away from the mainland, about a kilometre of open sea between the mainland and this island there. And it's got these enormous big walls, about 45 metres high they were, huge big thick walls, very, very difficult. I mean, you can imagine an island is hard enough to take with the land force as it is, but even harder when you've got these massive big fortifications and, of course, all sorts of defences as well to hold off any oncoming invaders there like that. Now, it's an important naval base for the Achaemenid Empire here, and as Alexander actually doesn't have a navy of his own at this point, doesn't have a proper navy, he knows that it's going to be very important to destroy all the Persian naval resources to ensure that he could maintain control over the eastern Mediterranean, because, of course, he's not going to stick around there. He's got his sights set on Egypt and more far-flung places there like that. So he really recognises the need to take Tyre and ensure that, it's not going to, even though it's going to be very difficult, even though he knows it's going to be very hard, it's not going to be an easy thing to do, he knows that he has to capture this fortress if he wants to continue this, this momentum that he's got as a conqueror. Now, he's a smart bloke, Alexander is. Won't surprise you to learn that he's a very, very smart fellow. And before just bum-rushing this city, he actually chances his arm at getting in a different way. He decides to try his hand, a little bit of diplomacy before he starts to deploy the swords here. There's this great big temple in Tyre. It's a temple to Melkart, right, who was the rough sort of Tyrian equivalent to Greece's Heracles, or as he's known mostly these days as Hercules. That was the Roman take on the Greek Heracles there. So Alexander, big fan of Heracles, he gets in touch with the Tyrians, says, "Oh, look, g'day there, you fellas. Have a listen to this one. If you let me into the city so I can make a little offering to old mate Heracles," Melkart, sorry about that. Yep, no, of course you call that. "I'll spare everyone in the city and I won't fight you. No worries. We'll just call it a day." Now, the Tyrians, they know that this is just a ruse to get Alexander and his blokes inside Tyre, and they are not falling for it. They say, don't even worry about it, old mate. Tell you what, there's a temple there in old Tyre back on the mainland. Just go back there, eh? Just go back and make your offering there. Now, a minor setback, obviously the Tyrians, they're not going to let him into the city just like that, bugger bum. So he has to have a think about things here and figure out exactly what his next move is going to be. The Tyrians reckon they're in a good spot. They don't see any need to capitulate or surrender prematurely to Alexander. I mean, look, Alexander's been conquering the pants off everyone he bloody looks at, and of course they all know that, but they feel pretty bloody safe. With a kilometre of sea and, 50-metre high walls in between them and him, they feel like they're pretty safe, to be honest. They feel like they don't have too much to worry about. Now, on top of this, they've got a navy, and he doesn't, right? And in preparation for a siege, they've started to evacuate all the women and children, sending them off to their old ally, Carthage, so they've got fewer mouths to feed should the city become besieged. Now, knowing the lack of resources that the naval resources that Alexander has, knowing they've got this powerful ally across the sea in Carthage, and, not really, well, kind of underestimating, I guess, the determination, the tenacity of Alexander the Great here, the Tyrians kind of, they sit back, they relax, and they don't reckon they've got anything to worry about. They've survived sieges in the past. They don't reckon that, this young Macedonian upstart is going to ruffle their feathers too much. And I'll tell you what, biggest mistake they've ever made here, because, of course, we're talking about Alexander the Great here. He's absolutely determined to capture the city. And for good reason. Again, as I said, it was a very, very important strategic, objective for him here. He wants to march down to Egypt, and he can't risk having a major Persian naval base at his rear while he's fighting further south. So when I'm talking about a Persian naval base, I'm talking about one controlled by the Persian, by the Achaemenid Empire here. So they're not actual Persians living on and controlling this island, but it comes under, this empire that's controlled by Darius. So it's, politically at least, it's Persian, even if it's not ethnically Persian. Anyway, a small distinction there to take note. Anyway, Alexander, he meets with his generals and he explains to them, listen, We're going to have to take Ty, no matter what, aren't we, boys? We're going to have to go and crack some skulls here. They're not going to surrender. Let's just let them have it, eh? Let's get in there, get stuck in. He gives them one last chance to surrender, probably knowing they're not going to take him up on his offer. But all the same, he sends in some envoys to demand the Tyrians surrender to him. But once again, these Tyrians are not having any of it. They might just have gone a little bit too far, I would say, with their response, because rather than just saying, oh, yeah, nah, look, thanks, fellas, for coming by, but I think we're right with the whole, surrendering biz. I think we'll just leave it. So, you can just bugger off back to Alexander, and let him know that he can tell his story walking. Thanks very much for stopping by. They don't tell you. No, that's not what they do. They take a rather different tack. They execute them. They just they kill them. They execute the envoys, which are pretty bloody ordinary behaviour, to be honest. But then, just to really make the point clear, just in case Alexander would, misinterpret it or not realise that they meant business, they chuck the corpses over the walls into the sea. Now, this was, to put it very mildly, a huge bloody mistake. It pisses off Alexander like you would not believe. And he goes, right, bugger this for a joke. Let's show those Tyrian bastards just how badly they've stuffed this one up. Let's get to it. Let's get this siege happening well and truly here. So, in January 332 BCE, Alexander lays siege to Tyre. Now, how, I hear you ask, does he do this? And it's an excellent question. It's an excellent question considering that he has no navy and that Tyre is, an island. Alexander orders his men to build a causeway from the mainland out to the island. Never mind sailing there. Don't worry about that. Let's just build a bloody bridge out there and walk there, mate. It's much easier. Well, it's actually, technically speaking, not a bridge, really. The Macedonians, actually, all they do is they just heave out rubble and rocks and ruins, timber and bits of whatever's lying around from old Tyre, right? And they chuck it into the sea. This works remarkably well. The water off the coast here is only about 2 meters deep, and it actually doesn't take very long for Alexander's army. Remember, there's 40,000 of these blokes ready to go. Doesn't take too long for Alexander's men to make a fair bit of headway out towards the island. It does get tricky after a while, however. I mean, they're working for weeks and weeks and weeks on this causeway. Lots of time is going past here as they're slowly but surely building their way out towards the island. But after a while, the water deepens quite abruptly, like a little shelf it is. It sort of plummets down, so it's all of a sudden very, very difficult for them to continue building this causeway. And on top of that, they're now within range of attack from the city walls, archers and missiles, projectiles, whatever else they're like that. And so, the people, the men who are out there constructing, trying to build this this causeway, being peppered by constant attack from the island of Tyre there like that. So, and on top of this, to make things worse, Tyrian ships are coming out and having little skirmishes with them out there. And so work, production of this this causeway is really getting quite significantly harried. But Alexander doesn't let this stop his efforts, however. He has his men build two siege towers that are then wheeled out to the end of the causeway as it's being built, and also orders the construction of a palisade, a wooden fence there, to block the Tyrian missiles. So this means that the construction workers, that the men there, they can work away relatively safely without, being peppered by arrows the entire time. And the siege towers further, basically they're there to, they've got archers and other defence mechanisms there to keep the Tyrians at bay while they're trying to attack the construction workers there. And they're draped in raw leathers, right? So they can't be set alight by burning arrows or whatever else like that. And again, the people inside them do a great job of covering the workers on the causeway below. So construction continues. They edge their way further and further towards the island here. And Alexander, he's down there. He's down there with the men. He's handing out cash bonuses to people, and he's even working there himself. Classic Alexander the Great move. He was, there's that saying, a good leader will never ask their followers to do anything that they wouldn't do themselves. And Alexander, he lives by this because he's out there with with all the fellas working on things, going, oh, yep, let me pick up this shovel, bloody chuck this rock in there, no worries at all. And he's getting stuck in and doing all the backbreaking work himself as well. So obviously, very, very good for the morale there. Anyway, the Tyrians, they realise that they need to step up their game here. They realise they need to step up their game, and so they try a much more aggressive tactic to try to stop the causeway from being built. They get an old ship. It was an old transport ship, and they fill it full of flammable stuff. They fill it full of, wood and sulphur and pitch and all sorts of other stuff, and they whack two great big cauldrons of oil up in the rigging, and they use two galleys to drag it towards the causeway. These galleys and a couple of other boats as well come out there as well, loaded up with soldiers. Now, this fire ship, it's dragged towards the causeway at a great speed. It smashes into... It's dragged out so fast by these other galleys that they get beached on the on the shore, you know, from where the causeway is being built there, because they're dragging this this fireship behind them so quickly. But the fireship itself, as I say, it smashes into the causeway, and the Tyrians, they light the oil in the rigging and then, you know, dive for safety into the water, because this thing goes up in flames like a tinderbox. It is. It goes up like this. The oil spills down onto the onto the rigging, onto the sails, down onto the boat itself, and the pitch and the sulfur and everything. It goes up in flames just like that, and this does an enormous amount of damage to the palisade, to the siege towers, and the causeway itself. But on top of that, while it's burning the siege tower, the palisade, the construction equipment at the end of the causeway, boatloads of Tyrians have also landed on the causeway as well, and they're fighting hand-to-hand with Alexander's men. They're killing stacks and stacks of them and destroying even more construction equipment, the stuff that was sort of out of range or a little bit further down the causeway. So it's an absolute disaster for Alexander, a stunning victory for the Tyrians. They set back the construction of this causeway enormously. They're running around high-fiving each other, thinking that surely this will be enough. Alexander will have had enough by now. He's going to move on. But our boy Alexander, come on, he's not going to give up there. He's bloody Alexander the Great, mate. He's not Alexander the bloody decidedly mediocre. He orders work to restart on the causeway. He widens it. He has two more towers built to protect the construction workers. And he shows, I'm not giving this one up without a fight. Now, he realizes, however, the causeway by itself, not going to be enough. He needs a navy. And so, you know, after weeks, after months of working on this causeway, and after this quite considerable setback, Alexander realizes that he has to take a different approach in addition to the causeway, and he decides he has to drum up a bit of a naval fleet for himself. Now, what he does, he actually leaves Tyre. He leaves behind his army. The army is behind continuing the siege, building the causeway, what have you. But he heads off himself with a retinue to try to find a way to solve this problem of putting together a navy. He levies vassals. He calls in favors. He commandeers captured Persian ships from other cities like Sidon and other areas that he'd already taken over there. And by doing this, he puts together a fleet of about 100 ships. In addition to this, after having heard about what Alexander is up to, putting together this massive fleet here, the king of Cyprus, who is obviously a pretty bloody cluey bloke, he decides that he also wants to be on the right side of history here. And so he offers Alexander the use of 120 more of his own ships, right? So now, I mean, a very, very smart move by this fella. Very smart move, getting on side with one of the greatest conquerors the world has ever seen. And after Alexander is, gratefully accepted his offer, he now has over 220 ships at his disposal, just like that. And with this massive, massive fleet behind him, he sails back towards Tyre. Now, rather than sail right towards the city, all ballistae blazing, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, Alexander doesn't, start this attack head-on attack here with his navy. What he does first is he parks up this massive fleet in full view of Tyre, just to get up in their brain zone, just a bit of psychological warfare there, and just show them exactly what they're messing with now that Alexander has got this enormous big navy here. It works. The Tyrians, they had no idea that Alexander would have access to such incredible naval power, and they definitely hadn't planned for it. There is no chance now, no chance whatsoever, that they can meet Alexander on the seas and hope to win. He's got full command of the sea now, and so they recall all of their ships into the Tyrian harbours and try to figure out their next move. There are two major harbours there on Tyre. There's the northern harbour, which they block off. They sort of barricade by anchoring three enormous triremes in the entrance there to block off the mouth of the harbour. And the southern harbour, they lower a big wooden boom, like a barrier, I guess. They float that across the front of the harbour and secure it in place there across the mouth of the southern harbour. And so both have effectively been blocked off. Now, let's just see how tough these Tyrian ships are, says Alexander after noticing what they do with the northern harbour. Let's just put these mongrels to the test here. And he orders some of his ships to ram the three triremes that are blocking the northern harbour. And would you believe it, the Tyrian ships are blasted to pieces immediately. They sink like stones. Alexander's just got too many ships for them to contend with, right? And this means that he can order a full blockade of the northern harbour while he puts the next phase of his plan into action. So the Tyrians are looking to be in very dire straits here indeed, right? Because Alexander's next move is he puts even more pressure on the city as well. He rolls siege engines out to the end of the causeway and mounts more siege engines on anchored ships in range of the city. And he starts to bombard the crap out of Tyre. So we've got, there are rocks and stones and missiles and whatever else being hurled great distances there and bombarding the city there like this non-stop. But the Tyrians, they're not going to go without, they're not going down without a fight. They rally here. They rally. They put their heads together. And despite Alexander's excellent position, they've still got a couple of tricks up their sleeve. So first thing they do, realizing that Alexander will eventually try to use ships to land troops in the city, they start to deliberately scatter massive, big, great, jagged, broken rocks around the base of their walls. Deliberately, they drop them down, sort of roll them down to the bottom of the walls there, creating this natural barrier between the walls and the sea that ships obviously aren't going to be able to get past without being damaged. So this is going to make it very difficult for Alexander to land troops anywhere. Even if he manages to break through the walls, the ships aren't going to be able to get close enough for troops to land. So pretty clever thing there to do like that. The second thing they did was they armor-plated some of their galleys. They covered them in thick armor-plating there and sent them out through Alexander's fleet, very dangerous thing to do, towards the anchored ships. Remember I talked about those anchored ships that had siege weapons sort of bolted to them, right? These armor-plated ships, they approach them, right? And while the armored ships are defending themselves from Alexander's attacks, the Tyrian plan all of a sudden becomes very obvious. They're not there to destroy, they're not there to try to attack the ships directly, not there to try to, to kill the sailors or the soldiers or anything else like that. All of a sudden, all these divers jump off the side, all these Tyrian divers, they jump off the side of these armored ships and dive into the water with knives, big sharp knives, and start to cut through the anchor lines of all of these siege ships. And this means that the ships, of course, they start to drift off course, and they make it more or less impossible for the siege engines to be aimed properly at Tyre. And so the bombardment sort of has to pause while these ships that are being cut free of their anchors are drifting, sort of freely throughout the water there. The third thing, and definitely the most brutal thing that the Tyrians did here, and this one had pretty dire consequences for them, as you'll find out. They started to heat up great big cauldrons filled with sand, not oil, of course. Remember, Alexander can't get close enough to the walls for boiling oil to be a consideration here, but instead they use sand. This sand was heated until it was red hot, and then it was strewn from the tops of the Tyrian walls, where the wind picked it up and floated it down to Alexander's ships that were downwind. And it, of course, this red-hot sand, it set the sails alight, it damaged the ships, but it gravely burnt and injured all of these sailors and soldiers aboard. Many of them died, but apart from the ones who didn't, are suffering horrific, horrific burns as a result of this red-hot sand that's been blasted down from on top of the Tyrian walls there. So it was, I tell you this, it was a spirited defense put on by the Tyrians, I tell you what, but it actually may have made their position worse long term, because Alexander, he's already not too pleased with Tyre and how difficult it's been to capture, but he is incensed by these Tyrian tricks, especially the burning sand, because of the damage the horrific damage it's done to his men here. So he is, Alexander and his men, they are howling for blood by the time that they kick the siege into next gear here. Alexander, in order to counter what's going on with the anchor lines being cut, he replaces all of the anchor lines with chains now that can't be cut by these divers. And he orders ships to actually sail right up to the walls of Tyre with great big ropes, and they lasso the jagged rocks that have been dropped to the bottom of the walls there and start to drag them out into deeper water. So you can see he's getting very, very serious about winning this city, going to great, great lengths to ensure that his campaign is going to be successful. A full-on naval battle is approaching. Everyone knows this. The Tyrians know this. Alexander knows this. Everyone knows that it's coming. And so the Tyrians, they try to steal the initiative from Alexander. They sort of put together a last-ditch effort to attack Alexander, try to catch him with his pants down. They notice that Alexander returns to the mainland every afternoon for a bit of a snack, a bit of a snooze, a bit of a relax and a rest, right? And so they pick their moment very carefully to strike. They draw enormous sails. They spread these great big bolts of cloth across the mouth of the northern harbour, the one that was being blockaded. And inside the harbour, they secretly muster 13 ships, right, who sail out very quickly in a single file line with the element of surprise from behind these sails. Now, this surprise attack, timed, for a moment when Alexander was supposed to be back on the mainland having a bit of a kip, it's very effective, initially at least, very effective indeed. They start to blast through all of these, all of the ships that are under the command of Alexander, but wouldn't you know it, today of all days, the day that they picked for this attack, Alexander has decided to skip his afternoon nap, and so he is ready to go, ready to chuck some punches around. He jumps onto a ship himself, and he sails to personally lead a counterattack against the Tyrians. His superior numbers and you know, the morale brought on by their leader here, with Alexander leading the charge, very, very quickly helps to overwhelm the Tyrian ships, many of which were sunk or captured straight away just like that, and the Tyrians, they have to leap overboard and try to swim back to the city. Now, with the Tyrian navy in such a bad way, with the rocks cleared from the base of the wall, and with the siege engines in, you know, bombarding the city non-stop here like this, Alexander is ready for the final blow. He moves his fleet up to the base of the walls, and using rams that he'd installed on his ships, he starts to smash the hell out of all of these walls. He's blasting them and blasting them with these rams until he can try to find, you know, try to find a point of entry here. Slowly, but surely, the rams, they do their work. And after some time, Alexander manages to break through a section of the wall to the south of the island using bridging equipment on some ships there. Alexander's army, and of course the causeway, Alexander's army started a full-scale invasion of the city. They start to load troops, all the way across this, the sea there like that, and start to invade the city. Although, I have to say, didn't start very well. One of the very first people, a commander, who actually got through to the top of the battlements there, he was a bloke named Admetus, got killed straight away by a spear as he climbed the battlements there just to go, whoops. So, not off to a great start. But after that, once enough troops were through, that was it. The city fell extremely quickly. And Alexander's troops, they are baying for blood. They're furious. They've got the red mist has descended on them there like that, and they've gone into full berserk mode here. They force their way through in the break in the wall and then through the harbours, and it's not very long before Tyre has fallen. The thing was, it really wasn't pretty. It really, really was not pretty. Alexander, after months and months and months of backbreaking work with the siege, plus, you know, all the other stuff the Tyrians had done, the envoys being chucked over the walls, the fire ships, the burning sand, Alexander's in a pretty bloody bad mood. And so he and his soldiers, they take it out on the city. They cut a rage-fueled swath of destruction through Tyre, killing Tyrians left, right, and center. They plunder and they pillage and they loot their way through the entire island here. Now, as usual, Alexander, right in the thick of things, the story goes, he's there in his armor, slaying Tyrians like there was no tomorrow with his spear. He's taking names all day long and leading by example. And in total, 6,000 Tyrians were slaughtered by Alexander and his army. And then 2,000 survivors were crucified, nailed to crosses on the beaches nearby. Another 30,000 on top of that were captured and sold as slaves. Alexander showed almost no mercy to the Tyrians and put almost the entire city to the fire and the sword after its capture. Now, you know, particularly shocking display of brutality. Really, I mean, you know, not exactly what you'd expect here for the capture of a city like this, but it had taken 7 months for Alexander to capture Tyre, and he was pretty bloody pissed off about the whole situation. He had a fair bit of steam to blow off, it seemed. I mean, you know, murdering 8,000 people and taking another 30,000 of them as slaves, he's clearly not mucking around here. But some people did receive mercy. Some people were, you know, some people did get off here. Mainly those who had sought refuge in the Temple of Melkart. They were the ones who escaped the wrath of Alexander the Great. And quite funnily as well, there's one final little story about the temple here. You know, people obviously, I mean, even the king of Tyre went there with his family and sought refuge in the temple, and Alexander, once he captured the temple, he did spare everyone that was inside it. But it wasn't the only thing he did at the temple, because before he moved on towards Egypt and beyond, before he left Tyre behind here, he did the thing that he'd apparently wanted to do all along in Tyre, and he made an offering in the temple, just like he'd asked to do to begin with. Would have been a lot easier. Would have been a lot easier if they'd just let him do it when he'd asked, I would have thought. Anyway, over the years, you know, I mentioned before that Tyre is no longer an island. It's not. It's now fully connected to Lebanon. Now it's in modern-day Lebanon. And you can look at maps of the city today, and you can see where the island once was. But now, again, solidly connected to the mainland. Over the years, the causeway that Alexander built has acted as a groin. That's a groyne. The things that you see at beaches to prevent longshore drift. This is, you know, a bit of half-assed geography now. But over the years, right, the causeway has widened and lengthened as sand and silt and whatever else the tide has deposited on either side of the causeway there, until it's connected to the island the mainland is now connected to the island fully, once and for all. It's now part of the mainland of Lebanon. Alexander, he went on to conquer and conquer and conquer. He created one of the mightiest empires the world has ever seen. And in doing so, of course, he shaped the course of world history. But I also like to think about the Siege of Tyre, and I like to think about how he shaped the course of world geography as well, and how over 2,000 years later, after the Siege of Tyre, maps of Lebanon's coastline have one fewer island than they would have had otherwise. But that's it. That's all she wrote today, sports fans. That is the story of the Siege of Tyre at the hands of Alexander the Great. I really do want to do some more Alexander the Great stories. Of course, there's so much to get across with what he did. You know, the Gordian Knot, another famous story. And, you know, of course, how he died is very interesting as well. So maybe we'll do some more half-assed history of Alexander the Great in the weeks to come. Anyway, going to close out the show with the normal boring housekeeping stuff. Half-assedhistory.net. A lot of people have been getting in touch with me using the contact form on the website. And thanks so much to everyone who's done so. I mentioned last week that, you know, again, if I haven't responded to your email, please just send me another one. I'm so sorry that I've missed it. I'll try to get across them all. And it's also the best way to suggest any episode topics that you may have. Of course, not everything is, you know, obviously going to work as a topic for an episode, but it's really interesting to read through the things that people suggest anyway. So please do send in those suggestions. A special thank you, of course, to Patreon members, people who support me financially on Patreon. Thank you so much. I mean, again, I say it every week. It's indescribable that so many people are supporting me with cold hard cash like that. So thanks so much for that. And if you want to subscribe to the show, I'd really appreciate it. Get those numbers up. Makes me look very good. Thank you very much. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or subscribe for Android. I don't know. Basically, you can pick your pipe. If there's a pipe with podcasts on it, Half Hour Century should be there. If it's not, let me know, and I'll do what I can to fix that. Anyway, that's enough of that boring nonsense. As usual, closing out the episode with a question asked. This one is a little bit of a setup here. It's about Alexander the Great, and it's about, remember before I told you about all the names of the places that he'd conquered, like Mesopotamia and Persia, and another place that he conquered was called Bactria. So the joke relies on that, the fact that he conquered Bactria. So remember the name of that place. It's asked by Reddit historian Abu Ben Adhem, and it goes like this. Are you ready? If Alexander the Great conquered Bactria, how come people still get infections?